Hey, everybody, it's Kai. This is the Corner Office Podcast, interviews with the folks running some of the most well-known companies out there. This time, though, I'm not technically talking to a CEO, but I think you're going to be all right with that. Joanna Coles is the Chief Content Officer for Hearst Magazines. You know, the 130-year-old company behind magazines like Cosmo and Elle and Esquire. Point of fact, Joanna Coles was the editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan until about a year ago when she got promoted to that newly created chief content officer position. Joanna Coles is today's Corner Office Conversation.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
How are
nice you?
So good to see you.
Very nice to meet you too.
Thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure. Hello.
So that's Dan.
He's got the microphone.
For this one, we're talking at her office in the Hearst Tower in Manhattan just as soon as she wraps up some emails.
I'm very pleased because I have an idea out there which I gave someone to read, and rather disappointingly, I haven't heard from them about it. And I was like, oh God, they hate it. And she's finally got back to me and said, I have so many ideas, I want to help you.
What's the idea?
I'm not going to tell you, but I might tell you eventually.
All
if it turns in something, I will tell you eventually. I can't tell you now. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am still in business.
Yeah.
Which is always good, right? I'm just getting this down. Okay, good.
No, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Done. Not looking at it.
So we're gonna climb right in.
Oh God, how terrifying, yes.
You know. Joanna Coles, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Tell us where we are. This is quite the office. I don't know that I've ever been in an office like this.
This is the office of the Chief Content Officer of Hearst. It's a rather thrilling office, isn't it? I've got my treadmill desk, which I love, and which I walk on a lot because sitting is the new smoking. We have a view of Central Park, and we also have this magnificent picture of Kim Kardashian at a newsstand, painted from the back, looking at different covers of herself.
It took me a minute. I wasn't going to say anything, but since you brought it up, that's a very Kardashian-esque pose in that portrait.
It is, by which I think you mean she has an enormous ass in her jeans.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but sure.
It's by the American artist Brendan O'Connell, who started a series of paintings at Walmart where he would take supermodels into Walmart. He would obviously be asked to leave Walmart, but eventually the powers that be at Walmart invited him down to Arkansas and ended up buying a series of his paintings because they are amazing, and he's a brilliant commentator on modern culture.
Yeah. Is it yours or is it the company's?
It's actually mine.
Huh.
But I do, if you want to point out, have a wonderful picture of Bob Dylan walking through Central Park, or actually down Central Park West, by Richard Avedon, which is the company's.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you have to give that one back.
Sadly, I have to give that back when they fire me. And I will know that when the head of security refuses to let me through the turnstile where I have to come every day.
This is probably a good moment then, talking about you getting fired, to point out that you've only been in this job like a year or
so. I have. So I'm hoping for a little bit more runway, but you never say never.
Can we back up for a minute before we get to you and magazines and media in New York? You used to be a daily news journalist. I mean, doing daily coverage.
I did.
Tell us the story.
Well, I started at the Daily Telegraph as a daily news reporter. I moved then to The Guardian, and then I moved to New York as the correspondent for The Guardian, moved to The Times of London. And really, it was the best job you could imagine. You could cover any story you wanted in America. I like to say there was no violent crime too violent for me to cover and no small town too small for me to visit. So I had a wonderful time traveling all over America. And actually, it turned out to be fantastically good training for navigating today's media landscape, which changes every day. And anybody who tells you where it's going to be in a year is lying because nobody knows.
I want to get there in a minute. But one of the reasons I have read that you left daily journalism and got into magazines because you wanted to have a different pace in your life. I'd love to hear you talk about the contrast between publishing magazines in this economy and daily news journalism.
Well, when I left, journalism was in a different position. I mean, the reasons I left daily journalism was, frankly, I had my second son. I have two children, my second child, and I didn't want to have to travel at the drop of a hat to go and cover something. It was just unfeasible with two children, and it wasn't anybody's fault. It wasn't the job's fault. I just couldn't do the job any longer with two children who I wanted to see. So I moved into a job I thought would give me more control over my schedule. That was 15 years ago. Now, the skills I needed as a daily reporter, which was a quick mastery of a new subject every day, turn out to be really useful.
You get a job at Marie Claire. You then get the job running Cosmo. You take those two magazines and you, with no offense to anybody who came before you, you put them back on the landscape.
Well, thank you.
Is there a secret? Is there a trick? Because you've done it twice now, and here you are running magazines for Hearst. What's the secret sauce?
There is no secret sauce apart from deep passion for women's journalism, which is always underestimated and often overlooked. And I was lucky enough, I think, to coincide with this new feminism and this new awareness that women weren't getting on as fast as they should have been. I mean, there were more women going to college and yet fewer women in leadership positions. And that didn't make sense. And young women were becoming animated by that, and millennial women were becoming annoyed by that. And I was able to reflect on that in both magazines.
You took Cosmo to a very high profile place in the election cycles of 12 and 14 and then heading into 2016. Clearly intentional.
Well, it wasn't just me. There's an entire team of people, and I would be wrong to say it was just me. But what I was interested in was a moment of empowerment in women. And I think Cosmo understood that before any other woman's media, because we started doing it in 2012. And it coincided really with the advent of Lean In, which was a very important book by Sheryl Sandberg, which really pointed out, she collated all the evidence and really showed there are no women in leadership in America, and that's a problem. And it's a problem for business, and it's a problem for the culture.
How important was it for Cosmo specifically and its business proposition for you to have a point of view?
Well, I don't know what would have happened if you'd appointed someone who had a different point of view, but I think for Cosmo it turned out to be very, very helpful.
When you took over Marie Claire in 2006 or so, right? Did you know what you were doing?
I had no idea what I was doing when I took Marie Claire over in 2006, but I was surrounded by a very bright bunch of young women who had very clear ideas. And I also knew that I believed there was a magazine that could exist where women who are interested in the Middle East and mascara could find things to enjoy.
What is it about magazines for you?
When I was growing up as a child, a magazine to me was like a finger beckoning me to the future. A magazine editor's job is to imagine what in 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, we're going to be thinking about, what we're going to be talking about, what that vision or that voyage of discovery will be. That's what makes it different to the internet. The internet is all about now. And when I'm on Twitter, I'm not interested in a tweet that arrived 10 minutes ago. I'm interested in the 3 seconds. It's all about now. It's about current engagement. A magazine is really a dream of how life will be. And I would throw myself on my bed. I would rip open the magazines and inhale them and look forward to a more glamorous, sophisticated life, which was what the aspiration of the magazine was. And that's why I love them. And I think that you carry them and it shows you are a member of a tribe. Being on Facebook, you are not a member of a tribe.
Have you then created that life for yourself that you saw in the magazines? As we sit here overlooking Central Park with your
nice observation,
desk.
Kai. Huh? I huh? might have done. I might have created part of it for myself. But it was very much for me a finger beckoning to the future of a life that I knew I wanted to lead.
Yeah, this is going to come out completely wrong.
How thrilling.
But I apologize. So I'm going to apologize in advance.
Yeah.
So we walked in a minute ago, and you were on this love seat. Is that a love seat, right?
I don't know. It's a wonderful gray chaise that I got from Curry and Company down south. I love it. It's very comfortable.
With I don't even know how to describe those pants. They're not sequined. They're something else.
They are lamé jacquard from Prada.
I was going to say jacquard, but
and
I wasn't sure.
And I sit here when I'm not on the treadmill desk.
Okay. With silver shoes with gold buckles on them.
From Gucci.
And you had your feet up on the couch, and it was almost the stereotypical New York high fashion journalism magazine editor. And it was quite the snapshot. You have an intentional sense of style. And I think that translates into how you do your job. Discuss that a little bit.
Well, I'm not sure how I can discuss that, really. I mean, I love covering the fashion world. I think it's enormous fun. We are, you know, the two industries, fashion and women's magazines, are completely codependent. I've just come back from a week in Milan, which was enormous fun. I saw hundreds of designers, loads of shows, super, super creative things going on. And I love having fashion be part of my life.
Is this a good time or a difficult time to be running magazines?
It's a challenging time, but it's incredibly exciting. I mean, we recently launched a magazine called Pioneer Woman with Ree Drummond, which has just sold out. We launched a magazine with Airbnb, yep. which I'm thrilled to see you brought in under your arm, which we couldn't be more excited about. There is a whole new generation of traveler that Airbnb discovered that we can produce a magazine for.
Okay, but do those travelers need an Airbnb magazine, or can they just go on their phones and figure out what they need to know?
Well, they're not zero sum. I mean, everybody likes everything, I think. I mean, you're not only getting content from a phone. People get content from television, from magazines, from newsstands, from their friends. And so I think you can be in all places most of the time.
If you're in all places, do you spread yourself too thin? I mean, what's the risk there?
Well, the risk is not being there. You want to be where your reader is, where your brand follower is. And what was exciting for me at Cosmo was being able to escape the confines of print, which are, after all, only once a month, and go daily on Snapchat, have this greater scale and be in the pocket of your reader when she wants to be entertained. I mean, that is real value.
Since you brought it up, you're on the board of directors at Snapchat.
I am.
Talk to me then about the connection between your digital vision for Hearst magazines and print and where they overlap.
Well, Hearst has 8 brands on Snap's Discover, which has really become the place where millennials find their news and their information. It's an extraordinary platform. And in much the same way that, you know, a whole generation of people used to get their news from Jon Stewart, Discover has taken that. It's reputable brands. The information is fact-checked. It has human editors. And despite the fact it's on a digital platform, Snapchat, on your cell phone, it's actually an incredibly reliable source of information from all the best media brands that there are. And it's one of the great, I think, media inventions of our age, actually.
Do you have a responsibility as a woman in a very senior leadership position in a very high-profile company in a culture-changing industry? Do you have a responsibility to other women to mentor them and bring them along?
Well, one of the things that I have been involved in is executive producing a show called The Bold Type, which is on Freeform. And one of the reasons I wanted to do it was to show that women in the workplace frequently support each other. I have never had an unsupportive female boss. I've had several female bosses. They've all been super supportive. I have tried to support the staff underneath me. I'm not a wild believer in mentoring people. I think if you behave well and you work hard in the workplace, then your peer group actually is the one that help you rise. And you hope that your bosses take note of you and support you too. But I think this idea that women somehow are deeply competitive in the workplace and don't support each other is A, untrue, and B, it's just not been my experience. So creating The Bold Type, which is a show essentially about a magazine, but really it's about a workplace where women have fun working with each other, make friends and support each other, was very important to me. I don't like the tropes, particularly in my industry, that the senior women are mean to the junior staff.
Yeah, that does seem to be a stereotype, right?
It's a total stereotype that came out of the Miranda Priestly character in Devil Wears Prada, right. Which is, and of course, conflict makes for great drama, but it turned out that The Bold Type, which has really been a great success for Freeform and got terrific reviews and great acclaim happily over the summer, and again, huge teamwork, big writer's room, and great urging to be creative from Freeform, was able to break that trope.
I was making notes on the flight here last night as I was getting ready for this interview, and one of them says something like, cuts out the BS. I don't want to pick it up right now, but you and your management style cuts out the BS. Is that fair?
Well, I hope I'm clear. I think the worst thing is working for somebody when you don't understand what they want. So I'm super direct. I'm super clear. And if the work is good, I'm elated. And if the work is bad, I try and help fix it.
What's your job? What do you do every day?
Well, I try and think of new partnerships to create really exciting, invigorating content. And, you know, it used to be that there was just magazine content or network or cable television content. Now there are so many different places for us to read different stories. And what I want to do is bring those stories to wherever the reader is. Is she in the bath? Is she on a plane? Is she curled up in the fetal position under her desk? Wherever the reader is, I want to provide something for her or him to read or view or hear or listen to.
What makes a good partner for Hearst and I guess for you too, right?
Well, what makes a good media brand is something that has a point of view. So Food Network, fun in the kitchen, great celebrities, they're terrific to work with. That magazine came out and it just went immediately. It beat every other food cooking magazine. It just kicks them out of the park. You need something or someone with a point of view. And you would be surprised at the number of celebrities we have spoken to, the number of companies we have spoken to who want to create a magazine but essentially have nothing to say. So we are always looking
That was a little harsh, right?
Well, but we're looking for partners that have a point of view and that have something to say over the long haul.
And how do you draw that out? I mean, do you get on the phone with celebrity X or, you know, global traveler Y?
Of course. I take endless meetings with people who dream of having a magazine or dream of turning their brand into a magazine or turning it into a media brand. And it turns out that actually they don't really have any values or they don't actually have a point of view. They just have stuff they want to sell. And that doesn't really work for us. You have to have a point of view. If you look at Airbnb, for example, it's really about connecting the world. It's for travelers, not tourists. It's for people who want to travel and see real life to understand Paris from a Parisian's point of view, as opposed to a tourist's point of view. And that is very powerful for a travel magazine.
So did Brian Chesky, the co-founder and CEO, come to you or did you go to him?
Brian and I were brought together by a mutual friend who said, you guys would love each other. I want to connect you. I literally said, I can't imagine I have anything in common with the founder of Airbnb. Right. And unbeknownst to me, he was saying exactly the same about me. Why on earth would I want to meet at that point the editor of Cosmo? But in fact, within 10 minutes, we sat down and it was a huge love fest and he's turned into a great friend.
That's so interesting because we now, when this airs, we'll have had both of you on the program and I can't for the life of me see the two of you getting along.
And yet we can have 5-hour conversations about the life of man. So there you go. That's the joy of magazines. It's a great content is the most wonderful excuse to have enormous fun.
Is it difficult for you having been in the editor job for so long? Is it difficult for you now in the chief content job not to reach down into the magazine and go, yeah, let's do this. No, let's do that.
No,
or is that part of your brief?
Not at all. I would never want to micromanage people. I don't have the time. And if you're a good manager, you hire good people to do the job and let them get on with it.
In 15 years, whether or not you'll be in this job for that long or not, I don't know. What does the American magazine industry look like or the worldwide magazine industry?
I think we will see new iterations of magazines with many different partners. I don't want to divulge anything, but we are working on several prototypes for big partners, which I'm incredibly excited about. And I think there will be many more subjects for magazines than we currently have. And some will go out of business, of course. That's just the nature of an evolving world. But I think that the magazine industry has a fantastic future. People love magazines. They love print. And digital companies like having something tangible that represents their brand.
So there's partnerships in this, right?
Of course.
That's the name of the game.
Hearst has always been brilliant at partnerships. We do Oprah's magazine, Food Network, HGTV magazine, Airbnb. We love embedding in a brand, trying to understand it, and then bringing it to life in a magazine with a digital channel.
So what keeps you up at night then?
Very little, actually. I'm exhausted by the time I go to bed. My brain is absolutely fried. And as long as I've walked the dog, I'm pretty much out for the count.
Why did you take this job? Or why did Hearst put you in this job, I guess, might be a better question.
Well, I think Hearst put me in the job because they were hoping that I would be able to come up with some new ideas and take some of the ideas that we have from a lot of people in the building and actually make them happen. And one of the disciplines of being a daily journalist was to always get the story, to actually have a goal in mind and manage to what we called in journalism then, it's a very Daily Mail, it's a very Daily Mail term, but get the mother, which is where you want to get the mother of the victim or the mother of the criminal. But it's like, can you get to the mother?
Right.
And I'm reasonably good at getting to the mother.
What's the measure of success then, right? Because it can't just be newsstand sales or like ad revenue, right? What's your measurement?
Well, a newsstand sales and ad revenue, why can't that be the measure of success? That seems to me an excellent measure of success. The measure of success is a healthy bottom line and creating a product that you see a real audience for that they respond to. So Pioneer Woman literally flew out of the stores at Walmart. We could not keep it on the shelves. It went back for reprinting. Couldn't have been more exciting. We've had a terrific response to Airbnb Mag. So that's how you know that you're creating something. We're in a consumer-led business. If the consumer doesn't want it, if the ad market's not going to support it, it's not working.
What's your risk tolerance then? How willing are you to give something a whack and see if it works?
Oh, you can't be too attached to things. You absolutely have to keep trying. Some things work, some things don't. The failure would be not to keep on trying.
Who is the competition then? I mean, who do you worry about?
The competition is, the real competition is two boys or two girls working in a basement on something that I have no idea what it is. That's the real competition.
But you can't possibly beat that if you don't know what it is, right?
Of course not. But that's what you wake up every day thinking, where is the next competition coming from? The competition that's already out there, I can think about, I can strategize over, I can partner with. What I find more complicated is the next thing, which I can't imagine, which someone else is already working on.
What's your stress level?
Truthfully, I'm not very stressed.
Maybe stressed is the wrong word.
Ask me that again.
No. Because you seem very intense. How about that, right? And in my mind, intensity brings with it stress, but I guess not.
Well, I would be stressed if I didn't have something interesting to do. I love the challenge. I love the intensity of it. I get to meet incredibly interesting, creative people, all of whom are trying to figure out what content resonates with people. And I have a fabulous office with a great view of Central Park and a treadmill. What more does a girl want?
This has been, as you know, an interesting, 10 days, 2 weeks in the magazine world in New York. Lots of people leaving high-profile jobs, lots of people moving around. Is it too much to say it's the end of an era in New York magazine publishing?
I don't think it's an end of an era at all. I think what you had was four people who had been in these jobs a long time. Graydon Carter, fantastic editor. He'd been there 25 years. Find me a captain of industry who's allowed to keep his job for 25 years. It's a very rare business that allows you to do that. And he'd had a terrific run. I'm very impressed by anybody that can wake up for 25 years and do essentially the same job every day. Similarly, the other editors under him had all done fantastic work. I'm sure they were all craving something new to do.
Given that it's only been a year, this is a premature question, but what's next for Joanna Coles?
Oh, good Lord. I just want to put one foot in front of the other every day, and who knows what the future holds.
Joanna Coles, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That was Joanna Coles, the chief content officer for Hearst Magazines. We made a little exception to the CEO rule this time. Hope that was all right. Thank you for listening to the Corner Office podcast. Do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you would. 5 stars is nice. 1 star, well, that hurts, but tell the truth. This episode was produced by Bridget Botter. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We'll talk to you in a week. Thanks. Bye-bye.